All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we are picking up. Kikom Rabban. We'll say today's daf is Ayin Beis 72. We are picking up 71b. Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Kikom Rabban. Three lines up from the bottom. We'll say beautiful, beautiful daf of Gemara today. So says the Gemara. So remember again, we brought down the two cases, Rabbi Osai, ultimately again, of Tuma Balua and Tara Balua, ultimately highlighting the idea that halacha lemaisa, when something is absorbed inside of the body, it neither transmits nor contracts Tuma. So the Gemara says, Ki kam Rabba. So the Gemara just pointed out, we already learned this concept beforehand. Why does Rabba feel the need to go ahead and restate it? To which the Gemara says, Ki kam Rabba, ki gon shebala shtei tabos. Rabba actually is coming to advance another novel case. What's the novel case? Where a person swallowed two rings. Achas tamei va achas tahora. One ring is tamei, one ring is tahor. And what happens? The lo mitamya le tamei le tahora. And both said the novelty over here is that what? Even though inside of the body of the individual, the two rings are going to touch, nevertheless, the tamei ring does not convey tumah to the tahor ring. That is the novelty of the teaching in this particular context. See, why is that? We'll say, why does this? Again, remember, in the outside world, if you were to touch the tummy ring to the tahor ring, what would happen? So tumah would be conveyed. So why is it that inside the stomach of the individual, when the tummy ring touches the tahor ring, they do not convey tumah? And the simple answer is because ultimately that's tumah balua, tumah taking place while absorbed, while swallowed, and tumah inside, a tummy item inside does not convey tumah. So the Gemara says, Tapa vayin beiz medalef v'ha. Uber v'chaya kishtei tabaos don't bro. So remember again, going back to our Mishnah, what did our Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that halacha lemaisa, if a woman is pregnant and the uber died, right, the fetus died in utero, and the midwife extends her hand into the womb of the mother and touches the fetus, that ultimately again the chaya, the midwife, is tameya, right? She's ritually impure. So why should she be tameya? After all, again, isn't the fetus what? Isn't the fetus tumah balua, right? It's absorbed or quote-unquote swallowed tumah, in which case it should not convey tumah to the midwife. To which the Gemara says, "Vaha uber v'chaya kishtei tabaos damu." So the uber and the chaya, we'll say, should be like two rings. Or as we'll say, what are the two rings over here? So ring number one is the uber, right? Ring number two is the chaya's hand. So, right, the contact is occurring inside of the mother. So halacha lemaisa, again, there should be no conveyance of tumah. To which the Gemara says, "Amar Abba, shiny uber, hoil v'sofol lotzeis." Rabbi says, "No." An uber is different. So why is an uber different? An uber is different because it is going to exit the mother. Right? At some point in time, even though that's tumah balua now, it's going to exit the mother. To which the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says, Shani uber hoa sofalotz. I'm a rubber. Rubber says, really? Uber sofalotzes tabos in sofalotzes? Okay, I agree. Right? What goes in will come out. So meaning, if the uber, right, the uber is going to come out, so is the tabas. So is the ring. So if that's the case, again, then the two rings that touch each other while they're in the stomach of the individual should also convey tumah. To which the Gemara says, Allah Omar Rava says, Pumpadi soi yodi taima dahai milsa. So Rava said, the rabbis from Pumpadisa, they know the logic behind this, right? They know the logic behind this ruling. And who are these rabbis from Pumpadisa? Umanu. Rav Yosef. I'm Rav Yosef. I'm Rav Yehuda. I'm Rav Shmuel. So Rav Yosef said in the name of Shmuel the following halacha: Tuma zu eina medivrei Torah ela medivrei sofrim. That in reality, the tuma that we are discussing, Rav Yosef, which tuma? The tuma of the midwife, right? That when the midwife extends her hand inside of the mother and touches the fetus that is now deceased, that tuma is dirabanan and not daraisa. That is not a... So now let's analyze this for just a moment. Now everything is coming together beautifully. Why is that tuma not daraisa? Let's analyze this. Why is that tuma not daraisa? Right? Because it's tuma balua. Because we're say at the end of the day, remember again what we have established, and now we're saying that everyone agrees with, is that absorbed tuma, swallowed tuma inside, does not convey tumah. Therefore, again, on a technical biblical level, when that chaya, when that midwife touches the fetus, which is in utero, so she's touching the fetus while it is in the fetus that is now deceased, that in, while it is still inside of the mother, that is the same thing as the two rings swallowed up by the person, one tame, one tar. And the same way when the tar ring touches the tame ring, it does not become tame. Why? Because it's tuma belua. So to midya oraisa, the chaya, the midwife, does not become tame. So why does the Mishnah say that she's tamea? It's dirabanan. It's a rabbinic tuma. It's a rabbinic tuma. To which the Gemara is supposed to say, so before we analyze the source of this rabbinic tumah, the Gemara asks a very simple question. My eino medivrei Torah ele medivrei sofrim. So we'll say, so then the Gemara just asks a syntax question. Why don't you just say, tumah zu medivrei sofrim? Just say, this tumah is drabanan. Yet the Gemara feels compelled to say what? Tumah zu eino medivrei Torah ele medivrei sofrim. So we'll say, I don't need that phrase. In other words, once you tell me medivrei sofrim, then what? Once I'm medivrei sofrim, I know then what? I know that halacha lemaisa, ultimately again, it's not da'oraisa. I know that. To which the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you why. To which the Gemara says, Dilo tema aliba de Rabbi Akiva da'amar ubar b'may isha tame. So both say, because I might have thought as follows. Remember again, we had Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that halacha lemaisa, don't say that this only applies according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that if the Uber dies in utero, that ultimately, again, it conveys Tuma. Right? It conveys Tuma. Oh, because remember, Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that Tuma Belua does, in fact, convey Tuma. Ela afilu Rabbi Yishmael. Rather, says the Gemara, even according to Rabbi Yishmael, who says, the Amar Uber B'may Isha Tar. He will say, so again, you might have thought that when do we say that the Uber conveys Tumah? This is according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds that Tumah Balua conveys Tumah. To which the Gemara says, no. Even according to Rabbi Yishmael, who says that a Uber does not convey Tumah, even he will agree in this case, the now deceased Uber conveys Tumah to the midwife when the midwife touches the Uber in utero. But what's the nature of that Tumah? That is a Tumah Dirabanan. My time, so we'll say, why would the rabbis go there on this tuma? Om Ravoshia, Gezera Shema Yotzi Vlad Rosho Chutz Lepruzdar. So we'll say, it's actually quite interesting. What we're concerned about over here, I will say, is that while the midwife obviously is doing something with the baby, doing something with the fetus, what we're concerned about is that while she's involved in the fetus, so there may inadvertently, or not inadvertently, but unknowingly, be some type of partial birth. Because there may be some type of partial birth. Remember again, one thing that we've come to learn both in animals and humans, which is what? Once the head comes out, although we've never discussed, by the way, how much of the head has to come out. Is it just the crowning? Is it have to be something more? So we'll see some more of that. I will say that once the head comes out, the baby is considered to be born. Now again, as we will see, once that baby is born, there is no question that the fetus is born, it conveys tuma. What we're concerned about over here is that while the chaya is involved in touching the fetus, the head may have come out, and the chaya is not aware, and it turns out that she didn't touch tuma belua, rather what? She touched an actual source of tuma. So because, again, these things kind of could happen without her awareness, therefore the rabbis were gozer a tuma dirabanan. Shem yotzi rosh, vlad rosh chutz leprozdar. Iachi isha nami. So we'll say, if that's the case, then why don't you impose this rabbinic tuma on the mother as well? Others of both say, so why don't you say that once the mother knows that, unfortunately, the baby has died in utero, so be goes there ultimately, again, tuma on the mother as well, because maybe the head came out a little bit, and the mother didn't realize, to which the Gemara says, Isha, margeshes biatzma. No, the mother knows. right? The mother knows. If the head started to come out, ultimately, again, the mother is going to be acutely aware of that. And therefore, halacha lamaisa, there's no such thing as this occurring unbeknownst to the mother. So because the concern that it could occur unbeknownst to the midwife, not unbeknownst to the mother. So then, obviously, the midwife is assisting the mother with something. So why can't, if the mother is aware when the head of the child comes out, so why don't we just say, if that does happen, she'll tell the midwife. She'll tell the midwife, right? And therefore the midwife can know, why impose just a blanket tumah d'rabbanan on the midwife? Let's say that if the head comes out, the mother will tell the midwife, and then the midwife will be tumea, to which the Gemara will say, gives a very interesting answer. Treda, the mother is a little busy, right? The mother is like a wee bit busy over here. So I'll say, so because she's a little bit preoccupied with birth, right? She's not exactly going to be concerned with the ritual purity status of the chaya. So I will say, just the way to imagine this case over here is the fetus has died in utero. The midwife is obviously helping the mother with this process. So ultimately, again, on a technical biblical level, when the midwife touches the fetus in utero, even though the fetus is now deceased, the fetus does not convey tumah to the midwife midaraisa, because that is tumah belua. That's the equivalent, ultimately, again, of the two rings. One tameh, one tar, which were both swallowed by the same individual, touching each other inside the stomach, does not convey tumah. The Rabbanan came along and said, midwife, you're tameah. Why are you tameah? You're tameah because the baby, the head may have inadvertently come out while you're helping things along over here, and you were not aware. You were not aware. So because of that, we will impose upon you a tumah d'rabbanan. That does not apply to the mother. We'll discuss what the status of the mother is in just a little bit. Why? Because there's no such thing as the head inadvertently coming out legabe the mother. If that happens, the mother will be acutely aware of that situation. So the Gemara says, "My Rabbi Yishmael, my Rabbi Akiva." So we'll say, so the Gemara made reference to the positions of Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva. Which positions are we referring to? Here we go. Disanya, v'chola sheyiga apnei asadela. Right. So we'll say the pasuk says as follows. The Torah is talking about over here items that become tamei meis, that contract tumas meis. So the pasuk says, "V'chala sher yiga al pnei asada, b'chala al cherev o b'meis." Anything, literally translated, will say anything on the open field that comes in contact b'chala al cherev. Chala al cherev means a sword that was used to kill another person. Because remember, again, the sword contracts; sword becomes a rishon. Or even an av, I should say, obemes, or comes in contact with the corpse, obe etzem adam, or with the bone of a person, obe kever, or with a grave, yitma shivas yamim, will become tameh 7 days. This is what says the pasuk of tumas meis. So watch this. So we'll say, v'chola sheyiga apnei asada, anything that is on the open field, lahotzi ubar b'mei isha d'Rabbi Yishmael. We'll say, Rabbi Yishmael says, what does this come to exclude? This comes to exclude an ubar, right? This comes to exclude a fetus. The fetus that is inside of its mother does not convey tumah. Now, where does he get this from? What's the drasha? So, it's actually a very straightforward drasha. The pasuk says, v'chola sher yiga al pnei asada. Anything that you touch on the open field. So, we'll say, so what is that referring to? That's referring to things that are on the open field, i.e. things that exist in the open world. This comes to exclude a fetus in utero, which does not convey tumah. So the Gemara says, "Div Rabbi Shmuel." These words, Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva says, "Lerabos golel v'dofek." Let's see. Rabbi Kiva says that it comes to include, the golel and the dofek. So we'll say the golel is the covering of the coffin. The dofek is the side wall of the coffin. That these items convey tumah as well. Rashi says over here. Rashi, first apnei asada, mashma galui. So we'll say the lashon of apnei asada refers to something that is revealed. Therefore, again, according to Rabbi Yishmael, this comes to exclude an ubar. Rashi says shehu tamun, because the ubar is hidden. It's not apnei asada, therefore it doesn't convey tumah. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says it comes to include golel, kisu aron shomes, the covering of the casket, or dofek, daf shenosnin bitsido. Ultimately, again, the wall that they put on the side, meaning the side wall of the coffin. Rabbi Yishmael, so we'll say, what is Rabbi Yishmael? Rabbi Yishmael, go love a dove, kill chasa gemirla. So we'll say, Rabbi Yishmael, now we'll say that everyone agrees that the lid, right, the cover, and the side wall of the coffin convey tumah. Rabbi Kiva learns that from the pasuk. Where does Rabbi Yishmael learn it out from? Hilchasa. It's a halacha l'Moshe Misinai. But Rabbi Akiva, Ubar b'may isha, tamei midoraisa. Now watch this. Here's where it gets interesting. Rabbi Akiva clearly holds that what? That an Ubar, right, a baby in utero that dies, the fetus in utero that dies, does convey tuma. Right? Does convey tuma, Rabbosai. So this actually is quite amazing. So now you have Rabbi Akiva on record as saying, tuma b'lua does convey tuma. Tuma b'lua conveys tuma. So says the Gemara. So for Rabbi Akiva, Ubar b'mei isha, tami d'raisa migal. Rabbosai, where does he get that from? That ultimately, again, tuma b'lua does go ahead and convey tuma. To which the Gemara says, Amar Avoshi, Amar Kra, Hanogia b'meis b'nefesh. Rabbosai, this is an incredible drasha. Hanogia b'meis b'nefesh. If one goes ahead and touches the meis b'nefesh, Rabbosai, Rabbi Akiva takes a literal interpretation over here. Ezehu meis shebenefesh shel adam. Rabbosai, listen, how does Rabbi Akiva darshan this? Hanogia b'meis b'nefesh. If somebody touches something that has died, b'nefesh. Rabbi Akiva darshan's b'nefesh means what? That is inside of something else. So how do you have a case of something that has died and is inside of something else? Ezehu meish shebenefesh shel adam. Havi omer ze ubar shebemay isha. I would say that what? This refers ultimately again to the ubar that is inside of the mother. So Moshe Rabbi Akiva is mamish of the opinion that halacha lemaisa, tuma belua conveys tuma. And therefore, again, ultimately, again, Rabbi Akiva will say, before we go on, then you understand the machlokis over here. In the case of the chaya who touches the now deceased fetus while inside of the mother, so everyone will agree that the chaya is tumea. What's the machlokes? The nature of the tuma. Rabbi Akiva will say it's tuma daraisa, because he holds that even tuma b'lua has the ability to convey tuma midoraisa. And where does he learn that from? Hanogea b'meis b'nefesh. If someone touches someone who is dead, who is inside of someone else. What is the person who's dead and inside of someone else? That's the case of the fetus that has died. Right? On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel will say that halacha l'maisa, tuma b'lua does not convey tuma, and it is only a tuma dirabanan that is conferred upon the that is conferred upon the midwife. So we'll say, now just to finish up the drasha. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel, haimi boile. So we'll say, what does Rabbi Shmuel do with the pasuk? Hanogia b'meis b'nefesh. This is amazing. What does Rabbi Shmuel do with it? So the Gemara says, mi boile the revius dam haba'a min ameis. We'll say, he uses it to teach me that halacha l'maisa, even a revius of blood, which comes from a corpse, shemetame, has the ability to convey tuma. Where does he learn that from? Shene'emar hanogea b'meis b'nefesh ha'adam. The pasuk says, if you touch a meis b'nefesh ha'adam. So Rabbosai, the pasuk itself sounds something is a little bit repetitive. Anyone who touches in a b'meis, in someone who is dead, b'nefesh adam, in the life of a person. Ezehu nefesh shal adam shemetame. Rabbosai, what is this nefesh of a person which ultimately conveys tuma? Havi omer zo revius dam. Rabbosai, what does this refer to? This ultimately, again, refers to a revius of blood. So he learns it out. He uses it to teach me that even a revius of blood ultimately conveys tuma. Rabbi Akiva Latame, Rabbi Akiva says, so Rabbi Akiva is quoted to his Damar, Af revius dam habab mishdemesim metambo. Rabbi Akiva takes even a step further. He says, he agrees, yes, a revius of blood has the ability to convey tumas meis. But not only that, even if you have one revius, which is made up of two corpses, right? So two corpses each contribute some blood. Together there is a joint revius, but there is no one revius from any one corpse. Instead, again, the revius comes from two corpses that'll also go ahead and convey tuma. Where does he know that from? So the Gemara says, so even a revius that comes from two mesim has the ability to go ahead and convey tumas ohel. Disanyo, because where do we learn that from? We'll say disanyo. Rabbi Akiva says, "Minayin the revius dam haba'a mishne meisim shemetame ba'ohel." So I'll say, from where do we know ultimately again that a revius of blood that comes from two corpses that it conveys to mas ohel? Where do we know that from? Shenemar va'al kol nafshos meis lo yavo. We'll say the pasuk says plural. Akol nafshos meis lo yavo. On all of the nefashos, right? All of the corpses that are dead, you may not come in contact with. Shtei nefashos v'shir echad. Ultimately, again, even if you have one shir, i.e., revius of blood, but that revius of blood comes from two corpses, halacha lemaisa, again, that has the ability to convey tumah. Shabbos says, so just to kind of close out this sugya with some halacha lemaisa, let's remember again, now we have two kind of back-to-back sugyas. In the previous sugya, we're dealing ultimately, again, with the animal whose fetus dies in utero. So if you remember, again, in that case, so the Rambam paskind that halacha lemaisa, if the fetus dies in utero by an animal, and the shepherd touches that fetus while still in utero of the animal, that does not convey tumah. That does not convey tumah. Right? Ultimately, again, that is the tumah beluah. So it appears to be that in the case of tumah beluah by animal, everyone will agree that the fetus does not convey tumah. What about by human beings? Supposed to listen to this. So the Rambam writes, this is in Hilchos Tumas Meis, Parachaf Ha'alacha Yurbeis. Ha'isha She'yelda Vlad Meis. Va'afilu Nefel Katzik Moshe B'yarnu. Harehi Tumea Tumas Zayin. Supposed to say, so if a woman gives birth to when a woman miscarries, right? So ultimately, again, that gives her tumas meis, right? That gives her, that nafel, that miscarriage carries with it tumas meis, right? Conveys to her tumas meis. Meis ubra besoch me'eha. So both say, so that everybody agrees with, which again makes sense. The nafel itself has the din of a meis. The miscarriage has the din of a meis. And therefore, again, she becomes tumea meis when she births the nafel. However, meis ubra besoch me'eha, upashta achayas yada v'naga bo achaya, temeya shiva, va'isha tahora ad she'teitzi havlad. So both of the Rambam paskins, if the midwife touches the deceased fetus while still in utero of the mother, so the mother is tahora. The mother does not become tame until the actual birth itself. What's the status of the midwife? So the midwife, if she touches the now deceased fetus while still in utero, will become tumea. The midwife becomes tumea. But what type of tumah? The tumas hachaya midivrehem. But I will say, says the Rambam, this is a rabbinic tumah. What's the nature of the rabbinic tumah? Gezeira shematigabo mishiyatzava prosdar. Just like the Gemara says, out of a concern that maybe there was a partial birth already that the midwife was not aware of. And maybe she, in fact, touched the fetus after some part of the head already came out, in which case it would be considered born, in which case she really would be coming. Aval minatora, ein maga beis hastarim, maga. Hoyel v'hu b'socha me'ayim ha'anogea bo tahar. So we'll say, so halacha l'maysa, says the Rambam, we paskin that tumah balua does not convey tumah. Tumas beis hastarim does not convey tumah. Tumah which occurs inside of the body does not go ahead and create any type of tumah reality. So therefore, again, this case of the midwife is a unique exception as well. The Rambam says in the very next level. The Rambam says, therefore, for example, if a person swallows a tummy ring, right? The person swallows two rings. One is tame, one is tar. Again, like I said, don't ask why. Just the person did it, right? It was a slow night. You know, sometimes people are just looking for stuff to do. So he swallows a tame ring and then swallows a tar ring. Even though, again, I know both of them are touching inside of my stomach, one does not convey tumah to the other. Why? Because ultimately, again, it's tumah belua. Afa pishina gozeba zeh. Fine. So we'll say, therefore, halacha lemaisa, the Rambam paskins, tumah bulua does not convey tumah. That's number one. Therefore, again, first of all, the mother, even though now the fetus is deceased, does not become tumah until when? Until the actual birth of the fetus. The exception to this, Rabbi say, will be the chaya. It's not even an exception. It's just an addendum. The midwife will become tamea when she handles the fetus in utero. Why? Out of a concern that maybe there was a partial birth of the fetus. And therefore, again, she touched it after the partial birth. That tumah, however, will only be a tumah diraba. Good, Rabbi say, weiter. Says the Mishnah. This is a longer Mishnah, actually. Says the Mishnah. Behema makasha lelit. So we'll say an animal is giving birth. Vaholtzi ubres yado. And again, the animal is pregnant, and the fetus sticks out its foreleg, v'chatcha, and you cut off the foreleg. You cut off the foreleg. The achakach shachat eslimo. And after that, you go ahead and you shech the mother. Habasar tahar. Shabbos say the basar ultimately, again, the basar, we'll say in this, we're going to see in the Gemara, the basar refers to the basar of the ubar, right? The remaining basar of the fetus, ultimately, again, is tahar. Now, we'll discuss exactly what the Gemara is coming to teach me. Rashi says, habasar tahar, she'in behema mekabalas tumah mechayim. Because we're both saying an animal cannot contract tumah while it is still alive. Remember, again, we'll say, I had this in yesterday's daf, one of the dramatic distinctions between human beings and animals is that a human being can contract tumah even when they are alive. An animal cannot. So we'll say, you understand by the profundity of that, incredible profundity, is a human being could contract tumah while he's alive. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi, remember again, you could only contract tumah if you have the ability for what? For tara. Tumah and tara are the two sides of the same exact coin. One state cannot exist without the other. A behema has no capacity for tara. Therefore, again, because it has no capacity for tara during its lifetime, therefore it has no tumah. A human being ultimately has a capacity for tara on many different levels, therefore also has the capacity for tumah. Fine. Says the Gemara. So case number one is the animal's giving birth. Your fetus sticks out its foreleg. I cut off the foreleg. Then shecht the mother. Everyone is fine. Now, obviously, you can't eat that foreleg, right? That foreleg is going to be what we call iver min achai, right? You can't eat it. But lemaise, again, the remaining parts of the animal are fine. Again, we'll discuss this in greater depth. Shachar esimo v'achar achatcha. We'll say case number two is where what? Is where ultimately, again, the animal, the fetus, sticks out its foreleg. And what happens? And you shecht the mother. So we'll say in this case over here, you shecht the mother and then you cut off the foreleg. So we'll say, so in this case over here, the fetus extended the foreleg, you shecht the mother, and then afterwards you cut off the foreleg. So we'll say in this case, habasar magnavera. So we'll say, so now we have something a little bit different going on over here. See now, we'll say at this point, and remember again, what's the status of the foreleg after shechita? What's the status of that foreleg? We discussed this, right? It's usher. Why? Why? Because again, basar basada trefa lo sochelun. That meat, that limb has gone out of its prescribed mechitza. Because of that, gone out of its prescribed boundary. Because of that, you're not permitted to eat. And I both say, so now watch this. So now I both say, shachar es ha'ima b'achar chatcha, habasar, the remaining flesh of the fetus, will be magunavela. I both say, ultimately, again, will be asar. Why? Because it has had contact with a nevela. I both say, what's the nevela? What's the nevela? The nevela is the part of the limb that was extending outside of the mother at the time of the shechita. Post-shechita now, that extended limb becomes a nevela. The rest of the uber that is still inside of the mother is having contact with the nevela, and therefore again becomes usher as well. Rabbi Meir, these words Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim say, Mago trefa shchuta. The Chum say, no, it's not an Avela. Rather, again, Rabbi say, it's a lesser form, right? A lower degree. Instead, it's considered to have contact with a trefa, which has been shechted. Rabbi say, take a look at Rashi before you turn the page. Look at this, Rashi, bottom Rashi's, Habasar maga nevela, basar ha'ubar maga eva minachai, shumatamik nevela. So we'll say, in this case over here, where the animal extended its foreleg, then you shechted the mother, right? So therefore, again, now the remaining fetus inside of the mother is considered to be ritually impure as it has contact ultimately again with the extended limb, which has the status of Eber Menachai, which conveys Tuma ultimately again, like Nevela. Se'inami, so we'll say next Rashi, Mago Trefa Shchuta, Shashchita, so we'll say on the other hand, Rabbi Meir will agree. Excuse me, the Chum will disagree. And the Chum will say that once you shecht the mother, Shashchita Afapi Shena Matera Se'iber Ba'achila, even the shechita does not permit the extended limb for consumption, nevertheless, mitarasu midei nevela. Ultimately, again, it takes away the nevela status. V'havye ketrefa shechuta. Ultimately, again, it's like an animal which is a trefa, which was shechted. She'ina mitame min haTorah. It will say, at least if you shecht the trefa, although you can't eat it, nevertheless, what? It does not convey tuma. So ultimately, again, it will say, so amud beis. Other days, so mamatzino betreifa sheshchitas mitarasa. So we'll say the Chum will say like this. We'll say, remember again. Let's go back for just a moment. Remember our treifa days. right? In our treifa days, sahalocha lamaisi, again, what's a treifa? You can't eat a treifa. So let's see, an animal has a hole in its lungs. So I say, so even if I shech that animal and the shechita is perfect, I am not allowed, remember, you have the treifas? Good, spent like a month on it. Hey, so I say, so again, if the animal has a treifa, ultimately, again, I cannot eat it. So I say, but what shechita does do is something very important, which is, if that animal just dies on its own, it becomes a nevela. Nevela conveys tuma. The beauty of shechting a treifa is that what? Although I cannot eat it, it does not convey tuma. It's not a treifa. So watch this. Just like I was said by treifa, we see that ultimately again the shechita removes the tuma from it. Af shechitas behema titar esaiver. So we'll say, the Chachamim posit, this should work in this case as well. So we'll say, what's this case? Right? Animal is pregnant. Fetus extends the foreleg prior to shechita. You shech the mother. So we'll say, so I know I can't eat the foreleg. That I know already. The shaila is, what's its status? The Chachamim posit that the foreleg should have the status of a treifa shechuta. Right? I know I can't eat it. I know I can't eat it. But it should be like a treifa that was shechted. So we'll say, what's the status of a treifa that shechted? Can't eat it, but what? But what? No tuma. So the foreleg should be inedible, but ultimately, again, does not convey tuma to anything else. So Amar Lam Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir says to Chachamim, that's not a good comparison. low, it's not true. Im tiara shechitas treifa osa debar sheva gufa. So I say a treifa, when you shech the shefer, I will say, here's the issue. The issue is the animal itself is a treifa. When you shech the animal itself, that's when you go ahead and you make it into a treifa shchuta. Titar esaiver davar she'eno bugufa. So we'll say, here's the difference. That limb that is extending out of the mother is not part of the mother. That's not part of the mother. So Rav Meir says, you're comparing two different cases. The reason why shchita of a treifa works is because it's something being done to the treifa itself. In this case over here, that limb which extends out of the mother is no longer considered to be part of the mother. As such, again, that's an avela. That's an avela that's sticking out of the mother. Right? Ultimately, again, you can't claim that halacha lamaisa that is going to be a treifa. To which the Gemara says, well, say, so that's the machlokes. So we'll say, the machlokes case ultimately is, ubar extends its foreleg before the shechita. Shechita occurs. Now the shail is, what do you do about? So we'll say, what do you do about the? What's the status of the foreleg? But understand, I will say, the status of the foreleg impacts what? Impacts what? The rest of the uber. Because remember, again, that foreleg is attached to the rest of the uber. So we'll say, Rabbi Meir will say that foreleg is an avela. If that foreleg is an avela, then we'll say, what do you do to the rest of the uber? It's tameh. It's tummy. Chum will say no. It has the status of treifa shchuta. So therefore, again, what's the impact on the rest of the uber? Nothing. You can't eat the foreleg, but the rest of the uber is fine. So we'll come back to that machlokes. So it says, when our Mishnah pauses for just a moment, minayim the treifa shechitas mitarasa. So we'll say, by the way, from where do you know? You stated it as fact that if you shech a treifa animal, although that shechita does not render the animal fit for consumption, it does go ahead and take away the tuma. So from where do you know that from? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you. Behemet measur abachila. So let's remember again, if you have a non-kosher animal, you're not allowed to eat it. Af treifa asur bachila. And I will say, so to a treifa, you're also not allowed to eat a treifa. So we'll say, a treifa animal, again, I want to be clear. Treifa in this context doesn't mean how we usually use treif. Right? So let's remember again, treifa is referring to over here a kosher animal, which has some type of disqualifying defect, which renders it inedible. So we'll say, so behemoth today means a non-kosher animal. So not, you can't eat a non-kosher animal. You can't eat a treifa. So the Gemara says, ma behemoth tameya ein shechitas mitarasa. So we'll say, I might have thought as follows. Just like by behemoth tameya, ultimately again, shechita is not mitaheret. Af treifa, lo titaren ein shechitasa. So we'll say, I might have thought that by a treifa also, shechita doesn't change its status at all. To which the Gemara says, lo, and I'll tell you why that's not a good comparison. Im amrit bebehema temeya shalo haisala shasa kosher. See, Rabosai, by a behema temeya, what's a behema temeya? Just a non-kosher species of animal. There was never a point in time where that animal was what? Kosher. Was kosher. It was never edible. Tomar betreifa, Shahaisa la shasa kosher. Rabbi said that's different than a trefa. Why? A trefa did have a time when it was kosher. And people say, when did a trefa have a time when it was kosher? Before it developed its trefa status. Therefore, again, so Tomar, trefa shahaisa la shasa kosher. So what say? So the Gemara says in this conversation, Tolucha masha evesa. The truth is, take back what you said. Right? Why? I'll show you why you're wrong. Harishanolda trefa min abeta minai. I'll give you a case. What about a, an animal which was born as a trefa. So say, let's say you have a cow which was born with a hole in its lungs. So we'll say, in that case what? The animal was never fit for consumption. To which the Gemara says, lo, im amrit pebehema tamea, shekein ein bemina shchita, tomar betrefa, sheyesh bemina shchita. So we'll say, here's the difference. What it means is like this. In a non-kosher animal, we'll say, that species is never fit for consumption. Masha'in came by a trefa, what? The species is fit for consumption. So we'll say, so in such a way, the Gemara says is as follows. Since in a trefa, the species is fit for consumption. So therefore, again, in the species, shchita will render the animal fit for consumption, obviously take away the tuma status. So in the case of a trefa, since its species, shchita works for it, even though shchita will not permit the trefa for consumption, shchita will at least what? Take away the tuma status of the animal. It will prevent it ultimately from becoming an avela. The Mishnah ends off with one last, seemingly extraneous case. Ben Shmona Chai. Supposed to listen to this case. We're going to get into the riveting worlds of animal gestational periods. Right? So it is. It's actually quite exciting. So the Gemara says as follows. So we're going to see that certain animals carry their young to different terms. One thing that is going to be clear is that an animal born at 8 months, we'll say, is a non-viable. If a cow gives birth at 8 months, it's not viable. That's the case of the Mishnah over here. A non-viable animal birth. So we'll say, ben shmonaches, ein shchitas metarasa. So we'll say, if an animal is born at 8 months, let's say a kosher animal is born at 8 months, the shchita, so we'll say, that is a trefa. If the shchita, however, does not work to take away the trefa status. Why? Lefi she'in b'mino shchita. Because they both say that species is never kosher. So we'll say, what the Mishnah is doing is something very interesting. The Mishnah is creating a subcategory of species and calling an animal born at 8 months its own species. So the Mishnah is just saying shchita for that animal doesn't only work for, is not only invalid for consumption, but won't even work to remove tumah. Okay, we'll see that in the Gemara. So it says in the Gemara, so let's begin at least one line. I know we only have a minute. So amai. So the Gemara says, but why is this? Now we'll say, now what the Gemara is asking over here is as follows. So remember again, in the case of the Mishnah, what we have over here is as follows. What we have over here is the Uber, right? If the Uber extended its foreleg prior to birth, and then what happens? You shecht the mother. So we'll say, so remember again, the Rabbi Meir said that limb is what? That limb is going to be an avela, and therefore is going to prohibit the rest of the uber in utero. Because the rest of the uber in utero now has contact with the limb that is an avela. Says the Gemara, why? Isn't that called what? So we just finished the sugya. What is that called? That's tuma balua. Amai tumas beisa starimhi. V'tumas beis astarim lo metamya. Now we'll say, is that not hidden tumah? Right? Is that not swallowed up tumah? Because again, remember, the point of contact between the extended limb and the ubra, we'll say, is where? Somewhere inside of the mother's body. So because of that, is that not tumah b'luah? Is that not tumas beis astarim? So why does that convey tumah at all? To which the Gemara says, leima Rabbi Meir l'tameh. Rather, we must be saying that what? Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that in fact, Rabbi Meir holds that tuma belua or tumas beis hastarim, hidden tuma, swallowed up tuma, does in fact convey tuma. This time, Rabbi Meir, we'll just do this one line. This time, we learned in the Mishnah. We'll begin this after stop in the middle. This is actually quite fascinating. Shlosha av shlosha shenechlok tar min amidras aval maga aval tami maga midras Rabbi Meir. So let's listen to this. I'll give you the background to this, then we'll stop. So what I said, the halacha is as follows. If you have an article of clothing, right, that is shlosha al shlosha, three tefachim by three tefachim. It has the ability to go ahead and contract what we call tumas medras. Tumas medras, Rabbosai, means that if someone like a zav or a nida rests against something, even without direct contact, so they're not touching it, right? Not maga, medras, right? So for example, again, the nida or the zav rests upon something, right? Rests upon something. They convey tuma to that even without direct contact. But the item has to be at least three tefachim by three tefachim. So we'll say, watch this. I have a piece of cloth. That's easy to illustrate this. I have a piece of cloth that's three tefachim by three tefachim. What happens? The zav leans against it. It contracts tumas medras. Then what happens? Rabbi Osai, I take that three tefachim by three tefachim piece of garment, and what happens? I go ahead and I tear it in half. Now Rabbi Osai, if I tear it in half, then what? It's no longer three tefachim by three tefachim. So it no longer has the shear to contract tumas medras, but it does have the ability of altame maga medras. But Rabbi Osai, but what it is able to contract is maga medras, direct contact, ultimately, again, from someone who is tame tumas medras. Look at Rashi just a moment. Rashi al tame maga medras, tuma hanogeva medras yeshlo, vavirishon the tuma, mipne shenagu zeba zeba, odan michubarin, shahayu medras. So we'll say, Dibre Meir, betanya, am Rabbi Yossi, v'chi be'ezo medras naga ze. So we'll say, but I don't understand, what does this mean? What does it mean when you say it's tame maga medras? Who did it touch? Who touched it? Ella, shenago bozov, she tame magazov. So I'll say, ultimately, what it means to say now is that when you take that piece of cloth and you now rip it in half, so that it's no longer shlosha al shlosha, right? Rabbi says, but it's smaller. It no longer has the ability to contract medras, but it has the ability to contract maga medras. That ultimately, again, if a zav touches it, it can go ahead and convey tuma. Or I should say, no, not convey tuma, but rather, again, it could go ahead and contract tuma. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with the lav itmar Allah, Amir Tzah Hashem, tomorrow.